In the shop where he was working, Angus had duplicated Turl's box, with one exception. It didn't push all the elements together when you raised the lid. A timed piston did that. You set the time, and then the piston closed the rods. Angus had six of them. The center bit was probably not as pure a metal as Turl's, but they were sure that was of no importance. The weights were varied a bit, but all around 75 pounds for the center bit. Angus had not put the centers in place. He had those sitting well apart, and every one was making a dent in what it sat on.
"Unless you've got in mind to blow up the universe,"
said Angus.
"Don't you think about eight will do? The load you just brought in should give us two more."
"But what does it do?"
begged Stormalong. Johnny shook his head.
"We don't know. But if Turl made one with that expression on his face, you can be very sure it is the deadliest weapon the Cyclos have. One thing you be sure of, Angus, pack the core separately and don't let anybody combine them on this planet. When you're all done, send them down to the underground armory in Kariba."
Johnny went out. He was feeling fairly cheerful. Lots of good things were happening. The Chinese in Kariba said they had engineers, and they did. But they were engineers expert in wood and stone and bridges and things. They also had some painters, and that small bowl and its surrounds looked pretty strange, but artistic. They lined internal bunkers with tile they made. It was all very neat. They even had a little village of their own between the atmosphere armor cable and the shore of the lake made by the dam. Their anti-aircraft pits had little pagoda rain domes over them. Good progress was being made in America. He was almost cheerful. They might have a chance. Thin, but possible. Of course, there was the mathematics thing. Lately, all Turl seemed to do was scan pages and pages and pages of incomprehensible mathematical equations. He had not started building a console, but he was obviously figuring it out from scratch. The old one was burned out. He had demanded it anyway for its case, and they had brought him all kinds of scrap, but none was it. It couldn't be, for Johnny had the original console, a burned to a crisp wreck, down in the garage here. So Turl would even have to do the metal case. Johnny saw a couple of Huckners being taken to another room. These prisoners fought each other, race to race, like wildcats. The tallest Huckner, not too bad looking in spite of having no nose, was a lower grade officer, but educated. He was showing vast interest in the vehicles parked around. Johnny stopped the group, intending to ask some questions. The tall Huckner was grinning superciliously at the vehicles. Ordinary Huckner crewmen didn't speak Cyclo, but their officers did. He recognized Johnny.
"You know,"
said the tall one,
"that none of these vehicle frames are built on Cyclo, don't you?"
"I didn't know,"
said Johnny. Although it made the sentries wary, the Huckner went over to a ground car and looked around under the edge of one of the bumpers.
"There,"
he said, pointing. Johnny looked at it. It was one of the alphabets on the galactic banknotes.
"That's Duralib,"
said the Huckner.
"It says, made in Duralib. The Cyclos import all their plane bodies and tank bodies and machinery from other systems and peoples. The Cyclos only furnish metals, and then motors and consoles. Nobody can use this stuff except Cyclos, since nobody has the drives. These other planets build other things for other peoples. But this Cyclo stuff is useless if you don't have the consoles. They make those on Cyclo and only on Cyclo."
Johnny thanked him. He said,
"Don't thank me, old fellow. If you ever start running out of consoles and motors, while you can buy all the bodies you want, you won't have a thing. It's the way the confounded Cyclos run things. They've got a throat-choke monopoly on every universe. You can't go up against them. Hockners have tried. You'll just lose.